And welcome to The Dorothy Project. My name's Alice Beverton-Palmer. I'm a DJ and activist at the Royal Vauxhall Tavern in London, and this podcast is my space to celebrate other women in queer culture. This week, I'm talking to Rose Lewenstein. Rose regularly performs at some of my favourite venues in London, the Glory, Soho Theatre, the South Bank, as part of the queer comedy cabaret troupe Sex Shells. That one was a tongue twister. Rose is often found on the piano or singing, and I wanted to talk to her about her songs like Straight White Man and what else she brings to Sex Shells. So I started by asking her about her stage name, That Woman Rosie.
Yeah, that actually, Jack Cullen from The Glory gave me that name because I joined the Sex Shells nearly 4 years ago, and they'd met each other at parties. And went, let's start a comedy group. And then I came on board and started playing piano. And we did our first gig at the Glory. And they each had a stage name. So there was Dr. Lestrange, Callum Mack, and Dom Top. And I think the Glory were writing up a sort of review or something to introduce us as this new act that was appearing there. And I didn't have a name, so Jack just wrote, and That Woman Rosie on the piano. And I was trying to think of a stage name, and we went through various things, and eventually I was like, that's a great name, because I think it plays on the fact that I'm different, but I'm with them, and I'm sort of, yeah, that woman on the piano, but also an integral part of it. So
so were they already all working together? How did you know them before? Like, yeah. How did that come about?
Adam's a very good friend of mine, and has been for ages. They met at parties, like, you know, those four-day kind of drug and sex fuel parties, and sort of were all getting a bit tired of it, I suppose, and would find themselves on day three going, what are we doing? Let's start a comedy group. So I remember going to see their first couple of shows at, somewhere in Dalston, and saying... And then saying to Adam, you know, it's kind of weird that you do these songs that are amazing, but they are all a cappella. And then we were at the Edinburgh Festival, must have been 4 years ago, and I think I was a bit disillusioned at the time with work, and I wasn't getting very much writing work. And I was going, I don't want to see any plays, I just want to go and see cabaret. And he was like, why don't you be in our cabaret? So it started like that, and then I've kind of written more for them and got a bit more involved. And now I'm a lot busier with other stuff, so it's only a small percent of, like, my time goes into that, but an important percent.
And so, like you say, it is funny, isn't it, when you're, like, the token woman in a group of guys. Like, yeah. How do you think, do people, like, sort of react to you as kind of like, oh, what's she doing here? Like,
It really depends on what the... on the structure of the show a lot of the time. And when I appear, there's quite a lot of fun to be had with, oh, she's just the woman on the piano in a fabulous headpiece, because Adam always makes me these amazing headpieces. And then suddenly I'll come out and sing this huge song. So if that happens, it's quite fun, because I'll suddenly be a presence. Or in some of our shows, I'm a lot more integrated. It depends. Because, I mean, I'm the only woman, so I'm different in that sense. But I'm also slightly apart because I'm playing for them. It's an interesting dynamic. And I've just, I've written a new song called Straight White Man for that show, which is all about how allies, and it's quite early, there's a lot in common with what we're talking about, I guess, but it's saying, you know, straight white men, who are you anymore? And we need to support them and be an ally because things are so difficult for them now.
I can't wait to hear that one. Yeah, I was going to say, I was like, and is it? Yeah, okay.
But actually, like, the straight white men have taken it really well. And I introduce it as, you know, as a mostly straight, cisgendered white woman. I do find myself in spaces where I'm forced to think about how I'm an ally and what does it mean to be an ally and what's my community and how do I identify. And so there's that, but there's also this bullshit about, oh, well, you know, you can't just be a straight white man anymore or you're the devil. And so it's kind of going, come guys, like.
And what do you think, like you say, from your experience, and obviously that's kind of one of the things that a lot of the people I'm speaking to have in common. What do you think is the best way, or a way you found, of kind of navigating that experience?
Yeah, I don't know. It's tricky because I think it's got to be led by the community that you're with, or that you want to be aligned with. So it's really hard to say, well, I'm doing this, aren't I great? Aren't I great because I don't judge anybody? That's kind of not enough, like, that's not activism. And so I'm not sure. I mean, a lot of the time I don't think about it because I'm just in those spaces and very comfortable in those spaces and have been made to feel very comfortable. But I'm really aware that I'm afforded a privilege that others aren't, because I happen to mostly fancy men, because I happen to have the same gender as the sex I was assigned at birth. So I happen to be to be afforded those privileges that others don't. So I can identify as queer, and I do, and my outlook is queer, my philosophy is, but I also can't say I go through the world in the same way as a lot of people in that community.
Yeah, it was interesting. I was talking to Amy LeMay, and I was kind of saying it's sort of the experience of having the privilege of being able to kind of tap in and tap out.
Mm, exactly, yeah.
It's not something that you always carry with you. You can kind of choose to...
Totally, and I feel that because, yeah, like 90% of my time I'm a writer, and I'm writing for TV and theatre, and so I'm in a very different world that is like a lot straighter a lot of the time than when I'm doing cabaret, say, at the Glory. It's got its own problems for women, obviously, but yeah, I can go through that, and then I can go and perform and put on sequins and do that. And I don't think it's the same experience if you're not those things, a straight white man or cis. Yeah.
So you said you kind of identify as queer, and it felt like that was a sort of, you see that as a kind of political thing as well. Like, because I'm speaking to everyone and everyone's using lots of the same terms, but they mean such different things to different people. So what does queer mean to you?
I often have these conversations, like after parties late at night with people, we're all talking about it, what it means. And it's a really difficult one with the word queer because, well, it's obviously a word that was reclaimed, but I think the term itself is really fluid because I think it's a response to challenging norms, challenging heteronormative norms and culture. So you don't have to be gay to be queer, you don't have to be trans to be queer, all these things, but it's kind of rejecting those norms, I suppose. And so that's how I identify as queer, in that I don't see that the way that we've all been brought up to, as a default normal, as my normal, even if I happen to be in a relationship that does conform to that at the time. And I think as well as identity, it's about community and it's about the people you surround yourself with. And I do surround myself with all sorts of people and love that.
Yeah, it's funny as well, isn't it? The places that you feel at home. And it's kind of a hard thing to define, really, isn't it?
Yeah, because I can feel at home in lots of places, I guess.
Yeah.
And not at home in lots of places as well, yeah.
Tell me about the first time you went to a gay bar or a kind of queer space.
I don't know if I can remember the very first time. I think when I was at secondary school, I used to go clubbing in Brighton, and I'm sure we must have gone to gay bars then. But to be honest, back then, just getting into a club full stop was so exciting and thrilling that like it didn't really matter if it was a gay bar or a straight bar. And then when I went to Brit School, I was there 16 to 18. That was a time when, because it's a performing arts school, so like a lot of people come from outside of London, and it's their first time being in this like cosmopolitan city, and so loads of people end up coming out and sort of experimenting in a way that some people are going, oh, you're going through a phase. But it's not. It's like they're just experimenting with their identity and their sexuality. And And a lot of people who didn't have the courage to, maybe like back in their hometown, found a community there. So, and I ended up moving in with a gay guy and two lesbians, who are all really good friends of mine, still are. And I was the only straight person in the house. And we used to go out. And at the time, as that was after Brit School when I was 18. And at the time I was working as a lap dancer, and but on my nights off, going out to all these gay bars and dancing with them. So I was like, definitely the straight girl in the gay bar. Like that was my scene. And I suppose because it was my first experience of going out a lot anyway, that just became the normal to me, and like an escape from the bar that I danced in, which is obviously very different.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. What was that contrast like one night to the next?
Yeah, just completely... Yeah, completely different, because you're a fantasy figure and having to manipulate lots of old rich men into giving you money and learning how to do that. Completely playing up to the feminine ideal and like becoming a fantasy and a doll sort of thing. So I didn't really think about that at the time, but I suppose looking back, it's probably quite good to have that contrast.
Yeah. And I often think it was something I really noticed when I started going out to gay clubs, especially like a lot of the ones around Soho where they have like all of the barmen are topless, or there's like go-go dancers on the bar.
Yeah.
And that feels like something like mainstream straight society.
Yeah.
And you think of like dancers and you think of like, you know, lap dancers who are female.
Yeah, totally.
And then you're like, oh my God, this just exists in this world as well.
Yeah.
I guess, do you think, did you feel like they were like two sides of the same coin, or that it was a very different kind of vibe and atmosphere?
Yeah, it did feel like a different vibe, because I suppose it might have been two sides of the same coin if you're in a sort of, you know, West End club and there's girls on a podium, but a strip club is a particular transaction where you're selling your time and you're selling dances. So that did feel really different, yeah. I do remember people sort of making fun of me sometimes, being like, oh, you look so straight, no one's going to believe you're a lesbian. I was like, I'm not trying to pretend to be a lesbian. And then also that thing about tourism, which people talk about a lot. But mostly, I mean, I've heard lots of... it's tricky when you talk about women in male gay spaces as well, because understandably, a lot of that community is going, this is our space. And then we get a load of hen parties coming along and being like, yeah, this is our space and we can feel safer. It's like, well, hold on, it's our space to feel safe in. And then on the flip side of that, there's this sometimes, like, I don't know what the word is, but like hostility towards vaginas, I guess, that comes from that, or sometimes the feeling that, I don't know, oh, it doesn't matter because I'm gay, so I can touch because of that. But I've really not experienced much of that at all. And I think it's because I hang out at places like The Glory, which are so amazingly welcoming to everybody, that I don't often find myself in spaces where I'm made to feel like an outcast by gay guys.
You've just said about seven different things that I want to pick up on there. Like covering so much. And I wonder if places like The Glory are much more queer, and so there's much less of that pigeonholing.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. The Glory is a queer space. And maybe that's... And it feels like working there is like a lovely family as well. And you get to know lots of different performers and obviously the people there, and then there's a lot of stuff that we do outside of The Glory but still with that family, if you like.
So how did you get into working with all of those guys? It feels like right back from when you were at the Brit School, it's all kind of tied up together.
Yeah.
Like your friends, your work, like
I know,
the gay
so
world,
strange.
It's all just one.
Yeah, I think in my 20s I was like, what am I doing? I'm all these different things, and actually they're the same thing. So we ended up at The Glory because Johnny Woo came and saw, I think this is right, I think he came and saw the boys at this other place called The Lift, I think, in Dalston, and said, why don't you do a night at The Glory and see how it goes? And so that was the first show I did with them, was their our first one at the Glory. And then we just got a monthly slot, and Johnny really, really nurtured and supported us, and let us have like total creative freedom to just try things out, but would also give advice because he's obviously really, really experienced. And so we'd do lots of new writing nights until eventually we'd build enough material that he'd sometimes go, okay, why don't you come do National Theatre River Stage or Unroll Variety or Latitude Festival or Mighty Hoopla or all these other things. So yeah, we've really grown that. That's like our home, I guess. Yeah.
And do you feel like you bring a kind of straight perspective?
I guess so. I mean, I don't look at it like, I don't think it needs a straight perspective. I think what's nice is that we've started to diversify our material and our audience. So I hope that like anybody, whether they're gay, straight, cis, trans, non-binary, can come and watch the show and sort of relate to it. I suppose I do bring that. And I think the first song that I did as a solo in that show was to the Lacage awful I Am What I Am, but I'm a straight girl in a gay bar. So it was sort of, yeah, looking at that. But also I don't think it needs a straight perspective. I think it's quite nice. Yeah, we don't need to. We don't have to cater to that. Like everything has a straight perspective.
And I guess that's also like, that's the rest of the world, yeah. Isn't it?
And there are so many crossovers with, you know, in terms of being a woman or being a gay man, and our experiences are sometimes wildly different. But sometimes, I mean, at the Glory, we have a lot of gay men in the audience, and they always get what I sing, and. When straight girls come and watch a show, they, apart from a few obscure chemsex references, they generally get what the boys are singing about too. So,
but that's funny, isn't it? Like when I was talking to Amy Zing from Sync the Pink, mm-hmm. and she made some reference to a rimming stool, and like I didn't blink, and she was like, "Isn't it weird that we know what these things are?"
Yeah.
And like you just have that like vocabulary, I guess. And
yes.
Like obviously, or like I've never been to a chemsex party, but I know what it is. I know what H&H means. Like, do you know what I mean?
It's, well, I don't know what
high H- and horny. Like on an app.
Oh, sorry, that is a line in one of their sketches, actually. Yeah, I should know that. Yeah, when I first joined, I was like, what's G? I thought I knew all about drugs. And then, yeah, you make a chart at a party.
Yeah, it's just this whole world, isn't it? And most like, you know, women don't necessarily know what's going on.
And actually, yeah, we know when we went to Edinburgh and our audience was really, really different, obviously, because the Edinburgh Fringe are not a cabaret venue in East London. But yeah, we opened with a rewrite of the Cell Block Tango
from Chicago.
But he had the baggie, so it's about a lost baggie at a party, and it's a baggie of methadone. And so, like, yeah, it was just that. Then evolved that in the intro, they would kind of say this is a gay drug and like sort of introduce it to the audience of what it is, which actually became just as funny as it being what it was to the people who understood what that was, because everyone understands what it's like to be at a party and lose their drugs, I guess.
It is interesting as well, like those references that can be quite specific. Like one of the things I find really interesting is like is just the whole phenomenon of RuPaul's Drag Race and how that's reaching this whole audience and like loads of teenage girls, and something that used to be this kind of like shibboleth and secret language and references just jumps and reaches
becoming mainstream.
Yeah.
Because I think in general, queer cabaret is becoming so much more mainstream, like what Soho Theatre have on, for example. I just don't think, we'd have seen that a while ago.
Yeah, and do you think that's a good thing, that kind of...
I think people want it. There's an appetite for it. And certainly, like places up at the Edinburgh Fringe, say, I mean, like, there are some great comedians and some great white male comedians, but we have had years of the same, of those same kinds of comedians and jokes. And the form has got to keep being reinvented, otherwise it's sort of stale, and we've got to keep responding to culture and and our lives and make it less. And the more mainstream that becomes, it opens up a new space for what is alternative as well.
And, yeah, yeah.
You know, once something becomes mainstream, then we're like, what's... You've got to be careful, I guess, if it's an alternative thing and it's hitting against something when it... I mean, I don't think queer cabaret is, like, mainstream enough for that to be a worry yet. But, yeah, when it does reach the mainstream, then what's the alternative and what are you hitting against?
That's interesting. Mm. What direction do you think that would take?
Oh, I've no idea, because there's still so much... We still are, like... Yeah. Trying to fight the norm, I guess, in that. I don't know. No, there is... I haven't thought that thought before. Like, I'll have that clarity of thought, so I will think about it. But I don't know what that means. But I think things are opening up the whole time. I mean, even within queer performance, the way that people challenge our preconceptions about gender, say, is constantly evolving. You know, drag is constantly evolving. Burlesque is an example of something that had to constantly evolve, I guess. So, yeah, I guess that's an example of, in the 20s or whatever, it was very radical for a woman to take her clothes off, and it was quite political to do those kind of performances. And then burlesque became extremely mainstream, and now it's, you know, all over the world, and people do it at hen parties, and then there's neo-burlesque. So burlesque takes on a different meaning. It doesn't mean anything to just dress up pretty and take your clothes off. It means something if you're challenging the gaze with that in whatever way.
Mm.
Yeah.
Hmm. And is there anyone who you think, like anyone else on the scene at the moment, who you think is particularly kind of exciting or doing kind of new things and pushing those boundaries?
Oh, there are so many people. I was going to say, when you asked me to recommend another Dorothy,
yeah.
I was like, oh, I would have said Juno, but you've already got her. but yeah, you should check out Ms. Kimberly. She's amazing. Amazing cabaret singer and performer and actress, who's an interesting Dorothy too, because a woman who is like performing constantly a lot on the gay scene and at Pride. And yeah, she'd be interesting.
I will definitely look her up. And the other thing I'm asking everyone is for a favourite memory of their Dorothy life.
Yeah, I was trying to think of that. I think my favourite part of my Dorothy life is performing with Sex Shells. So the always the first time I try a new song in that context is fun. But I also remember, oh, this just come to me, being at like a huge big gay party after a show at a house in Hackney, and not really knowing anyone, like just turning up sort of like on my own and a bit drunk and like wanting to dance and have fun. And then everyone was like, I don't know, it was really, really busy, and I wanted to go and use the bathroom, but I felt a bit scared because there were like 10 people in there. And then suddenly Jack Cullen, who you know, yeah, from The Glory, opened the door and went, oh, no, it's that woman, Rosie. Everyone get out. She can come in here. And I felt really looked after.
Aww.
But I'd say so that's a fun one. But I'd say, yeah, my favourite times are performing with the Shells. Yeah.
I love what Rosie had to say about how something like drag going mainstream actually opens up space for a new alternative art form, that if something stops kicking quite so hard against the norm, something else then springs up and takes that role. Next week, we have our second ever friend of Dorothy, in the form of TV's favourite legal eagle, Judge Rinder, who'll be talking about the women who've influenced his life. Did you know he grew up in the same tiny corner of London as Rachel Stevens and Amy Winehouse? I don't know what was in the water around there, but it created legends. Don't forget to give us a cheeky rate and review on Apple Podcasts. Drop us a tweet at Dorothy_podcast if you liked the show, and I'll see you next week.